Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good morning and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and I want to just wish all of you a very, very happy new year. I hope you all had a great time celebrating the holiday season with your family, with your friends. Hope you got out to play a little tennis. And for those of you who were traveling to junior tournaments over the break, I hope you had a great experience and that your kid learned lots on the court and off the court, and you got to spend some quality time with them while you were in the process of all of this. Those of you who follow Parenting Aces website know that I was out in Arizona with my son for Winter Nationals, his first trip out there, which was pretty awesome. And I had the pleasure of getting to meet face-to-face with several Parenting Aces readers and listeners, and that's always such a treat. So I hope you got to do the same. I hope you got to be with some fun people and enjoy your break. So for today, we have kind of a little bit different topic. We're going to be talking about choosing the proper equipment for your junior player, whether that's a racket, strings, grip size, string tension, all those things. And I have as my guest today master racket technician Tim Strawn. And Tim has extensive experience in stringing rackets, in advising players and coaches on proper equipment selection, and he's going to share some of that with us today. His exact title is Executive Director of the International Alliance of Racket Technicians, and Tim is, like I said, going to bring his expertise to us today. I want to encourage those of you listening live, if you have specific questions for Tim, please call us. 714-583-6853 is the number. Again, 714-583-6853. We are here to take your calls, and Tim is anxious to answer your questions. But before I bring him on the air, I want to play a quick commercial. When we come back, master racket technician Tim Strawn.
Warning. Orthopedic surgeons are seeing an increase in overuse injuries when young athletes perform the same repetitive stressful motions over and over. Pitching, tennis, weight training, even long swimming workouts can cause overuse trauma that may require surgery. If your kids play and train hard, visit orthoinfo.org or stopsportsinjuries.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine.
Welcome back to the Parenting Aces radio show. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and we have with us today Tim Strawn, Master Racket Technician. Tim, are you on the air?
Yes, I'm here, Lisa.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really excited. You and I have had a couple of pretty extensive phone conversations over the last few days, and I know that the information you have to share with my listeners today is so valuable and going to be so helpful. So I really appreciate so much you being here with us.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, great. So before we jump in with my questions, I wanted to just give you the opportunity to tell our listeners a little bit about your background and your experience in working with players and coaches and their equipment selection.
Okay, I started stringing rackets about 25 years ago, and at the time I was attending almost every year the Sporting Good Manufacturers Super Show right there in your hometown, I believe, Atlanta. And one thing kind of led to another. I would attend seminars by the United States Racket Stringers Association to try to improve my skills with stringing. And then eventually got connected to a couple of people who were working at the tour level. And from there, they knew that I wanted to do that. That was an aspiration of mine. And so eventually I did end up working for the ATP WTA tours with various teams. Wimbledon with the Beau Brand team early on, and then the Wilson team at the U.S. Open, and the Sony Ericsson in Key Biscayne. And I did that for about 8 to 10 years. And during the course of that, I developed a website that was quite popular with a message forum, because at the time when I first put that up, there was not a lot of information out there, in particular about people who were stringing and customizing rackets for players at the tour level. So I put that up. It got very popular, and then that later evolved into the International Alliance of Racket Technicians. So now that group, we basically service professional and aspiring professional racket technicians from around the world. And I do a training event in Florida once a year at Saddlebrook Resort, where we have technicians that come from all over the globe. And we usually spend about 4 or 5 days down there with different seminars and presentations. And that's become quite a project for me. But that's just kind of a brief explanation of what my background is.
Well, it's pretty extensive and pretty impressive. We are very lucky to have you here.
Well, like I said, I'm glad to be here. So if you've got questions, I'll do my very best to answer.
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to jump right in with just a, kind of a general question, which is, what factors should a player consider when choosing their tennis equipment? And at what point should they start thinking about maybe changing their equipment?
Now, are we talking about junior players or
yes.
all players?
No. Junior players. We're gonna keep our focus on the juniors today.
Okay. Well, I think basically when you're looking at rackets for junior players, you kind of have to define a couple of things, because, you know, I've worked with juniors. I used to teach professionally, and I've worked with juniors from age 5, you know, all the way up into the teens. So, I mean, if you're talking about a junior who's 5 years old and just starting the game, you know, the approach is going to be a lot different than it would be with a junior who is 14 and been playing, you know, since they were 5. Kids starting the game, they do much better with a racket that's specifically designed for juniors, which means it's going to have a smaller grip size, it's going to weigh less, it's going to be shorter than a standard 27-inch adult frame. I would guess that you probably come from pretty close to the same era that I do, where when you were a junior player, you played with an adult wooden frame. Am I correct?
I've had a Chrissy Everett autograph, absolutely.
And I've got one hanging on my wall right here. And when I started, we all played with, you know, wooden rackets. They all weighed a ton in comparison to today's rackets. And they had the same head size and the same stringing pattern. So, you know, there wasn't really a lot of difference. So things have changed a lot. You know, now we've got manufacturers who've gotten savvy about this through the years. And they manufacture rackets that are less than 27 inches long for kids. So it could be anywhere from a 19-inch racket all the way up to 26. And the nose frames then get sized properly to that particular junior player. And there are a lot of different factors that you have to take into consideration when you look at that, simply because not all juniors are the same, okay? You might say that, okay, I've got someone who might need a 21-inch racket, or let's say a 23-inch racket, and they're 7 years old. But what if that 7-year-old is larger? You know, they're just a bigger kid. You wouldn't necessarily fit that person for a 7-year-old racket. They might be better fit for an 8 to 10-year-old racket. So there are a lot of these factors that have to be taken into consideration for young kids who are just starting the game.
Let me interrupt then, you one.
Sure.
Can I interrupt you one sec, Tim?
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask you, is there a difference or a significant difference in the youth rackets that you could get at, say, Walmart or Target versus the ones you're going to buy at a racket specialty store?
Yes, there is. Because typically what you'll find at a Walmart or a Dick's Sporting Goods or whatever the sporting goods store might be, a lot of times, let's keep it to Walmart. A lot of times those are going to be very, very inexpensive rackets. And they're not going to be like a graphite or a graphite composite frame. They're going to probably be made out of aluminum or something similar, so which also dictates the lower price. So, yeah, I mean, my recommendation would be if you found that your child has a very high interest in tennis and learning tennis, and you as the parent want to encourage that, then when you start them out, I would say find a knowledgeable racket technician who you can go to and consult with, and they can give you the proper advice, because it's not only the length of the racket that player is going to have to be fit for, it's the grip size that needs to be looked at, because some kids, their hands are larger than others for their age group. Young girls have long, slender fingers, whereas boys maybe not so much, so the grips are going to be different, and that's probably one of the bigger things you want to make sure that you check, is to have the proper grip size. So work with a professional and somebody who's trained to do that, whereas that won't happen if you go to Walmart, because if you do get some help, that person probably just finished selling someone a bicycle. And
right.
Now they're going to, you know, sell you a racket. So there's a big difference.
Well, so that kind of begs the question, though, Tim. How do we find a knowledgeable racket technician? Because I mean, a lot of our tennis retail shops, and I know my neighborhood shops are like this, you know, they hire high school kids to work there, and moms, and, you know, all sorts of people that aren't necessarily trained in this stuff. How do we determine that the person helping us make this big purchase decision really has the knowledge to do it properly?
I think that's a great question, and it's one that I get a lot. So I would start by saying that a lot of times when, let's just take a typical tennis shop, a standalone retail tennis shop in any neighborhood, which there are fewer and far between these days. But when you go to that shop, if they have anyone on staff who has had any training, they will proudly display any training certificates or certifications that that person might have or the staff might have. The United States Racket Stringers Association has certification testing where a person can become a certified stringer or a master racket technician. My organization, where we're training racket technicians and aspiring technicians every year, we're the only ones that have any kind of training like that. And we really get into some meaty, hands-on stuff. And I offer a training certificate to people who complete that each year that everybody, I'm assuming, takes home and proudly frames and hangs on their wall. And another way that you can tell is just by asking some basic questions like you're asking me now. You can pretty much tell what the depth of knowledge is with somebody when it's concerning rackets or racket recommendations, just by asking some general questions. You'll find out very quickly if they're just, you know, like you said, that high school teenager who's just, you know, filling in because they need someone to actually do that particular job function.
Gotcha. Okay, well, that's good advice. So there are specific certifications from your organization and others that someone could get to give them that expertise.
Yes. Yeah, and the United States Racket Stringers Association has been the one that's been around the longest, and it's had an ongoing certification program for quite some time. I think when I took my certification for Master Racket Technician back in the early 90s at the Super Show in Atlanta, it wasn't even called Master Racket Technician at the time. It was called Certified Racket Technician. But they have had that program ongoing for quite some time. My organization does not have a certification program or test per se, but what we do is if somebody comes to our training event, which is at Saddlebrook Resort each year in Florida, and they go through that training, you can pretty much be assured that they've come out of that training a much better technician with a greater sense of knowledge about what they're doing when it comes to understanding different strings, string types, gauges of strings, rackets, racket types, stringing patterns, customizing rackets. We just cover a broad spectrum, even as in-depth as successful pro shop management we teach at this symposium. So, if you get someone who's either certified or has gone through that training, you know you're working with somebody who can really help you with the questions that you might have.
Great. And so that said, so you've got this young beginner who is maybe starting with a junior racket. A lot of those junior rackets come pre-strung, if I'm not mistaken. It's been a long time since I've shot for one of those. But what is important in terms of string and string tension for the youngest players?
Well, with the really, really young juniors, the five, let's say, eight-year-olds typically, and this is just speaking in general terms, because you're going to have some kids who are quite young and are going to really excel, and so they're going to have different needs. But for the most part, the string and the tension in the racket is not going to really play a significant role at that age, because a savvy teaching pro is not going to be as concerned about that child's equipment as it relates to their performance, because when they're very, very young, the focus usually is on things like, first of all, things to keep their interest level up, okay? Second of all, hand-eye coordination drills, things that they can do to improve that. And just, you know, progressing from that into just making easy contact with a ball that's tossed by hand. So string and tension is not as critical for the very, very young players who are just beginning. But as they progress, and now they become more interested, they start to show a passion for what they're doing, now you may have to take that, you know, six-year-old from that 23-inch racket that you bought, maybe even to a 26-inch racket, which is just under the standard adult size frame of 27 inches. There, at that point, you may start to look at having the racket properly strung and just having a game assessment so you can see how well that racket's been fitted to the player with regards to how they're actually hitting the ball, things of that nature. So to answer your question, at a very young age, I don't think that is as critical as much as it is to where you get up to, you know, older juniors who are really starting to show some progress, and they can blow through being in a 21-inch frame to a 25 or 26-inch frame before you can blink an eye because the kids grow so fast.
Right.
You look at them. You look at them one day, and they're 3'4". You look at them the next day, and they're 4 foot tall.
Right.
So the changes can come pretty quick.
Should the coach be the one making that determination that it's time for a young player to move up to the larger frame? And quickly before you answer that, when you talk about frame size, you're talking about the length of the frame from the head down to the bottom of the grip. Is that right?
Yes, from the head to the end of what's called the butt cap on the racket. And those rackets will most generally also have a fairly good size head size, okay? So you're not talking about the shorter the frame gets, the smaller the head size gets. So that doesn't happen. We still stay with a larger head size for those frames. But yes, to answer your question, I'm referring to the length of the racket itself.
Because I remember when I was a kid, a lot of us just had adult rackets and somebody sawed off the end of the grip and made it shorter.
Yep.
And
yep.
It kind of served that purpose, right?
Yeah, and that worked fine. It was easy to do because the frames were made out of wood back then, so it wasn't a big deal to unwrap the grip and cut off an inch or two. But now, I mean, it's pretty incredible when you look and see what manufacturers have done with the rackets, okay, and with regards to junior rackets, because now they get pretty in depth with things like the Wilson line that does SpongeBob and Dora to kind of keep the interest of the kids high, and they come in anywhere from 19 to 21 inches, and then they go on up from there. You can go to 21, 23s, and even with more advanced recreational players at a junior level, Wilson makes versions of their blades. They make versions of their Roger Federer Prestak frames as well. So the length is, when you hear me referring to that, yes, it's the length, but just remember the head sizes are still relatively big because we want to give them as much area to make contact with the ball as we can.
Okay. And so again, should the coach be the one making that suggestion or determination of when the child is ready to go to a larger size frame?
Well, I think that's a pretty open question and one that I could really stick my foot in if I wasn't careful. because, okay, look, I was a certified teaching professional for a number of years with both USPCA and PPR. And I think what you have is you have certain individuals who take it upon themselves to be the very best that they can be in whatever they choose to do. And you'll see that in the certification programs that those teaching organizations have. And some pros are just very happy to be in a comfort zone where what they do is they teach tennis. And they're teaching your kid how to hit a forehand or a backhand, whether they're 5 or 15. And they leave the racket recommendations and the stringing and those things up to maybe an assistant pro, or someone else is hired to work in the pro shop. And then you have some coaches, trainers, teaching professionals who have taken it upon themselves to get a lot of training where it comes to learning about rackets and racket technology, strings and string technology, and then stringing. So when I think the easiest answer and the safest answer for me here would be to say that if you can find a coach who also can show you that they've had some legitimate training in the area of equipment recommendations, stringing, customizing rackets, whatever it may be, then you really have the best of both worlds. And those particular people, I think there are fewer of them out there, but I see we usually have anywhere from 75 to 100 people coming to our conference each year. And a lot of these people are trainers and they're teaching professionals who just want to learn more about it. They just have a genuine interest in it. So if you can find one that has both, then I think you've got the best of both worlds.
That's fantastic. I want to just remind my listeners, if you have any questions for Tim, call us at 714-583-6853. We'd love to hear from you. All right. So moving along, what are some of the common equipment-related injuries that you've seen or heard about in juniors? Because we've talked a lot on this show recently about sports injuries and ways that we parents can help our kids avoid getting injured. And really, one of the simplest things is making sure they have the right equipment.
Right. And so I think we're going to be moving into more of an area where we're talking about an older junior, right?
Yes.
Maybe somebody who is 10 and up, playing a lot of tennis. Game has progressed. They've, for whatever reason, picked a particular racket, string, tension, combination, or you know, at least gotten to that point. I think probably the first thing I would point out is this, that more often than not, I don't see this as an equipment issue. Or maybe I should say, I don't always see this as an equipment issue. In my experience, I've seen it as an overuse issue. So not only is the player playing too much tennis, but the parents also have them in a number of other sports-related activities, and then by the time they get to their tennis lessons, they're exhausted. And that can result in poor stroke technique, which in turn can result in an injury. And so, I mean, if you think about it, you know, you're a tennis player, Lisa. As you tire when you're playing in a tennis match, what happens? You get sloppy.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
You start missing balls. And the same thing can happen if you take your child to a two-hour soccer practice and they're running, and then they have just enough time to grab a sandwich at Subway and you throw on tennis shoes and put a tennis racket in their hand and then take them for an hour and a half, 2 hours of training. They've already, you know, taxed their bodies to the point where they're not going to be peak when they get to their tennis lesson. And, you know, something like that doesn't have anything at all to do with equipment. Okay? And if you want to relate it to equipment, then some of the things that I see with, say, racket, string, and tension combinations would be that entire combination could be too stiff. So the racket could be too stiff. It doesn't flex at impact. The string is stiff. It doesn't stretch at impact. And the tension is too high, which doesn't allow that very, very stiff string to stretch at impact. So, you know, that puts a lot of stress on the arm, the elbow, the upper arm, the extensor muscle that runs up and down the player's arm, where typically tennis elbow occurs right where that extensor muscle attaches to the elbow, in the elbow joint. So if you kind of have an idea about how strings react and how different rackets react at impact with a ball, you know, for the most of us who don't use, say, copolymer strings or commonly known as polyester strings, most strings stretch. And some strings stretch more than others when the ball impacts the string bed. And when they stretch, they absorb energy. And then when they snap back, they return that energy to the ball. So that's a component of power. So, you know, another thing you can add in there is if you string the racket at a lower tension. Okay, and you've heard this, I'm sure, over and over and over again about, you know, loose strings provide more power and tight strings provide more control and things of that nature. And that's not always really the case, and it's definitely not really the way that a lot of people look at that these days, okay? Because loose strings also can provide, say, the potential for a higher trajectory over the net and the potential for more string, whereas the tight strings tend to, you know, offer that control, but it's in a flatter ball. So, you know, when you look at a polyester string that's very stiff, and then you put it in a racket that's very stiff, and then you string it at a very high tension, to me, that is just begging for a problem. Because that's just a very, very hard, especially on a player's arm. And consider, too, how much some of these kids play tennis. And then couple that with the fact that something that a lot of people never seem to bring up or never seem to talk about, and I think this is extremely important for any parents listening whose child has come to them and said, I want that Aero Pro Drive that Rafa uses, and I want RPM Blast because Rafa uses it. Now, an Aero Pro Drive is not the most flexible racket on the market, and Baupa RPM Blast, while it's a very good string in the right application, is not the softest string, and it doesn't stretch much at impact. And depending on how hard your child hits the ball and how often they play, they may not break it very frequently. So what does that mean? Now you have a very stiff frame with a very stiff string, and there are still a lot of technicians out there who do not understand the dynamic of reducing tension in copolymer strings. So they're stringing it at 60 because, well, that's what they use, you know, with their other racket with French synthetic cut. And so you've got that dynamic going on that just really wreaks havoc with the player's arm. And the biggest point that I want to make, and what I was saying earlier about how critical this is to realize, is because that string doesn't break, what do you suppose is the end result of that? They don't restring frequently enough. And, it's a big difference when you look at players. Let's just take anybody at the tour level. When they come in to play at a tournament, they're stringing before every match, and they're stringing before every practice. So they're getting the maximum potential out of that stiff string in a very short time. You know, that string dies, and then they go back and they replace it frequently. But as a parent, Lisa, if you had to spend $18 to $20 just for the string, and then pay a professional technician the fee to install it. So for, I would say, typically a set of high-end polyester is going to cost you upwards to $35 to $45. What are you going to do if you're a 15-year-old breaking that every week?
Go broke. I am living testament to that.
You will. And so, you know, you have to consider that. So you have to be very careful when selecting these strings, because typically string and or racket, the kids, where are they getting their information? They're getting their information online. So they have no idea, you know, of how reliable those sources are. And there are a few reliable sources there. I don't mean to demean every source just because it's on the Internet, but I think there are more kind of wannabe experts out there making recommendations and throwing up their own blogs than there are actual experts. So The child gets the information from the Internet, and then what does he do? He comes to mom. Mom, I want this racket, and I want this string. And mom goes, well, okay, that sounds good to me. Is there any reason why? Well, I just read a lot about it online, and it seems like a great racket, a lot of good reviews and so forth. So what do you do as a mother? You take their word for it, and that's how a lot of kids end up with the wrong racket, the wrong string, and the wrong tension. So, you know, it can be a real dilemma for a parent, because let's face it, it's not really your job as a parent to be highly trained and very knowledgeable about racket strings and rackets and tension. I mean, there's simply a plethora of racket strings on the market. So how are you going to know what to pick? And
let me interrupt
you,
Jim. We've got a caller holding on the line. Let me bring a caller on. Caller from area code 919605. Are you there?
I am.
Did you have a question for Tim?
I do. It kind of goes along with what he's saying about a lot of string being out there. As the parent of a player, I was wondering, what's the best way to try some new equipment? You know, your junior grows, they get stronger, they get better technique, and then they need to change their strings from what they're using and their tension and so forth. So with all the string out there, what's the best way to talk to a stringer about choosing a new string, and how long should they use that in their racket before they've decided to try another one? And I was just wondering what his recommendations were for that.
That's a great question.
Very,
and I'm going to ask another aspect of that, because my son's getting ready to go through this process. Is there an economical way to test new strings?
Well, I'll answer your question first, and then I'll go to the caller. There are a number of places online where you can buy string packs, and you know, get a variety of strings after you've gotten recommendations, and you can do that. But I will go back to what I said earlier, and I think it's important that you go work with a professional. Find a professional in your area, whether they work at a club, a standalone retail store, a pro shop, whatever it might be, and try to work with them. I can't emphasize that enough, because it's going to be very difficult for you to go out and navigate through that. For the caller, I would ask to just kind of help me, and we'll just take your child as an example. What's the age of your child, and give me a little bit of background on their playing ability or playing level. Are they competitive USTA tournament level players, et cetera?
She actually dropped off. She'll call back in. Hopefully she's listening.
Well,
but
let's just say she's got a 15-year-old and they're playing competitive USTA tournaments. And
okay.
their consideration is, I think she wanted to know about strings, if I'm correct, and switching from one string to another. So to arm the parent with a little bit of knowledge, what you should first realize that there are kind of two categories of strings that you could look at, okay? And basically those are going to fall into strings that would be like in the playability level or the durability level. Beyond that, I mean, those are the two major things that you look at. But then when you break it down, you've got like four major types of string. And so you have nylon, which is commonly referred to as synthetic gut, and those can include solid core synthetic guts that'll have a certain number of wraps around the core, and then they're coated. And typically the number of wraps around the core of the string prior to the coating can often dictate something as important as tension maintenance on the string. So how long does it maintain the proper tension, which obviously is going to translate into results on the court. And then also nylon strings would include the multi-filament category or type, which is going to have several thousand tiny fibers within the core or that make up the core. And then so you have nylon, then you have natural gut, a completely different animal all in and of itself, pun intended. And then you have the monofilaments, like I talked about earlier, which everybody knows as polyester. And or the technical term there would be aramid fibers, okay? And everybody knows Kevlar, the same thing they make bulletproof vests out of. So you can imagine the durability of that string. Surprisingly enough, a very good graded Kevlar feels very soft and pliable in your hand. But when you put it in a tennis racket, it doesn't stretch. Little to no stretching in that particular string. And then I want to point out kind of a new kid on the block when it comes to strings that a lot of people are not aware of but are becoming more and more aware of. And this is a string that's made by Ashaway, which is one of the only American, if not the only American manufacturer of racket string out of Ashaway, Rhode Island. And they're making a string out of a material called Zyax. Zyax is not new to our industry. It's been around a while. But it took some refinements to get it to where they could really use it in a tennis racket. And interestingly enough, when I ask people the question, you know, what's the best premium string? Or, you know, what's the string that works the best in terms of playability in a racket? A lot of times you're going to get the answer of natural gut. And that's correct. It tends to grab the ball. It stretches more at higher tensions. It recovers. You know, when you hit the ball, if that string is stretching and then recovering to a certain point, natural gut keeps doing that over and over and over again, where a nylon string will do it for maybe the first 4 to 6 hours, depending on the string, and then it starts to denigrate. The value of it returning begins to decrease. With the Zyax, and in particular, this would be MonoGut ZX Pro from Ashaway. That Zyax string, we in our tests, stretches as much, if not just a little bit more, than natural gut. And not that long ago, if somebody would have asked me if there was a string out there that did that, I would have said no, because nothing really kind of works like natural gut does. So knowing the types of strings, okay, look at categories, playability, and durability, and then knowing the different types of strings that fall under that category, nylon, natural gut, monofilaments or polyester, and aramid or Kevlar, and then begin to break that down. So for the caller, let's say your son, who's 15, is playing with a Batlat Pure Drive racket, has a 16 by 19 stringing pattern, and they've been using a standard synthetic gut, but they're breaking it, and they're breaking it far too often. Mom is going broke. So a natural progression would be not to put them in, say, an all-polyester string bed, but maybe to move them to a hybrid string of maybe polyester in the main and a nylon in the cross strings. It's very popular. I mean, there's so many combinations that you can come up here with, but typically you play off of the main strings, okay? If we could put main strings in a racket and keep them completely vertical, would they never spread apart, never go anywhere, we wouldn't have to put the cross strings in, right? But we put the cross strings in, it stabilizes the string bed. And if you watch when your junior breaks the string, it's typically going to be the main string or the vertical string. So that's the string you're going to look to shore up in terms of the durability. If you put all polyester in that racket, then it's going to become quite stiff for your player. And at a young age, I'm not very prone to recommend that without first going to a hybrid string. So look at a hybrid with polyester to do that. Another thing I mentioned earlier was the stringing pattern of the racket. So for the caller, that 16 by 19 stringing pattern in that Babolat Pure Drive frame, if they're breaking strings in that, then certainly you don't want to go to some of the newer rackets that are designated as spin rackets, because now they're going to decrease the number of cross strings, and they're going to go like 16 mains and 15 crosses, and that opens up those holes, those little square holes that are formed by the cross strings and the main string, and it lets that ball embed itself deeper into that string, and as a result, the strings move more. And when they move more, they notch, and they'll notch, and you'll get premature breakage. So if you've got a child who's breaking a lot of string, hitting a hard, heavy ball with a 16 by 19 stringing pattern, what you might want to look to is moving to a different racket that may have like an 18 by 20 stringing pattern or an 18 by 19, something like that, where those holes formed by the cross and the main strings become smaller, and the notching is reduced, and the breaking then gets reduced because there's less notching in the string.
But
I hope that's a bit of an answer that helps her with her problem.
Don't you have to, though, balance the type of racket and string pattern with the type of strokes that the child has? And the reason I'm asking that is, and I'm going to use my kid as an example. He's 18. He's going off to college next year. He plays with one of the Wilson spin rackets with the more open string pattern. He goes through string like crazy. He is getting ready to change string, mainly because the university where he'll be playing next year uses a different brand than what he uses, and it sure would be nice not to have to pay for string and have him be able to use the string provided by his college. So he's getting ready to test a bunch of different string within their line. And, you know, on the one hand, he wants something that feels comfortable, meaning the same as what he's doing now. But on the other hand, it sure would be nice to find something a little more durable without changing too much about his stroke and the ball coming off of his string.
Will the college be providing the strings to him at no charge?
Yes.
Will the college be stringing the rackets for him?
Yes.
Your problem is solved.
I mean, right, but
you don't
we've
have
got
to pay
9 months
anymore,
till that happens.
Yes. So, okay, on a more serious note, to answer your question, yes, you have to look. Every player should have a certain level of analysis done by a professional who can recognize what's going on the court when they're hitting a ball. So let's say your player comes to me and they say, well, you know, I want to, since you were asking about string, I want to change string. Okay? Then the first thing that I would probably be asking them is, you know, what are you looking for in the string change? Why do you want to change? Or something that's driving that notion that you want to change strings? You know, is it because you're breaking a lot of strings? Is it because, you know, you feel like another string will help you produce more spin, whether it's top spin or slice? I think it's really important that you talk to the player and get those questions answered, because let's say they're looking to get a little more depth on the ball, and they think that this is going to be accomplished by just changing string. They're not even talking about a tension change. So what if you gave them a string that allowed them to get that additional depth on the ball, but it had an adverse effect on another part of their game? And what if that part of their game was actually their strength? So you've got to be very careful. You know, I would always ask that question to the player. You know, why are you selecting a new racket or changing your current racket or changing your setup at all? And what is it you want to change? Because the next question I would follow up with is, what's the weakest part of your game? Because maybe that might be what they're trying to improve. And then what's the strongest part of your game? Because I think as a technician, you've got to have that ammunition in your belt before you start going, you know, head first into trying to make an adjustment. Because you certainly don't want to diminish the strongest asset that that player has. And so, you know, that can be a very tricky thing to approach.
That's an interesting thought, actually. And I'm just, you know, using it in our own situation, I'm definitely going to make sure my son thinks about those questions before he makes this change. But, I mean, do you feel that the majority of the manufacturers are creating string that could be interchangeable one manufacturer to another? Or do you feel like the manufacturers really do have unique qualities to their string that make them, you know, so that it's difficult to switch from one to the other?
The answer to the last part of that question would be no. And the reason I would say that would be two things. I would go back to what I said earlier, and that was there are basically four really different types of strings: nylon, natural gut, polyester, and aramids or Kevlar. And then we talked about the Zyx. So there are four types of strings out there. So the difference, say, between one natural gut and the next natural gut is not going to be a tremendous difference. There might be some difference. One might be a little stiffer than the other. The difference between monofilaments or polyester strings is the same, because a lot of manufacturers are now trying to make polyesters that are softer, okay? There's a particular polyester string that I like and works very, very good for my junior players. And it's called Sidewinder, and it's made by a company called Gosen out of Japan. And it's a very soft string, but it's also a textured string. It's got two raised fibers around the outer core of the string. And so, you know, that's different. There is a difference there. But I don't think manufacturers have some kind of inside secret as to how to make one nylon, you know, that much different than another. Like, say, for instance, the difference between a Wilson synthetic gut a Prince synthetic gut or a Balance synthetic gut. And one thing that is probably helpful for people to understand is that not all of these companies make their own strength. There are just a handful of manufacturers, mostly out of the East, that manufacture strings. Companies come up with what they want. They determine the makeup of the string they want, the material they want. They go to those companies. Those companies manufacture it, and then that particular manufacturer brands it under their name. So it's
so
not
it's
like,
kinda
you
like
have
that whole
all of these
Sony Guts thing.
Pardon me?
So it's kind of like that whole Sony Guts thing with electronics. It may say Mitsubishi, but it's really got Sony Guts.
Yes. Yeah, that could be true. Certainly. All I'm saying is that, you know, I've been operating my business for a number of years, and I sell and use a lot of string, you know, made directly from these companies out of the Far East. And I never have any problem convincing my players that this string is going to be just as good as this manufacturer's or that manufacturer's, once I explain to them how that whole process works. So that would kind of get back to what you were asking earlier about how do you know you're working with somebody who's knowledgeable and can really help you with these things. If you can find somebody just in a short conversation, they're throwing out stuff like that to you, then you know that this man or woman's kind of been around the block and they've really done their research and they know what they're talking about and they're giving you good, solid facts.
Got it.
So
I've got two other areas I want to touch on. We're coming to the end of our hour and I want to make sure I get this in. One is the gauge of the string and the impact that the various gauges have. And the other is the weight of the racket and adding things like lead tape to the head or things like that. Can you address both of those for me?
Sure. And any particular specific question to either of those areas?
Well, just in terms of string gauge, you know, what's the difference between using 16 gauge versus 17 gauge, and how do you know which is better for your junior player? And then in terms of the racket customization, what does adding lead tape to a racket do, and at what point is it appropriate for a junior player to consider that?
Okay, so let's tackle string gauge first. So as it relates to tennis, typical tennis string gauges are going to be from 15 to 19. We do have some manufacturers out there that are doing more with 19-gauge strings now. One company that I have a pretty high opinion of right now that's fairly new, that's been around a while, but they're getting more inroads now, is a company called Solinco. And Solinco makes 19-gauge tennis strings. So for the average parent who has this relationship with their child and they're trying to talk about string gauges, just remember that it's just like in wire. The higher the number, the thinner the gauge strength. The lower the number, the thicker. And the most common gauge string used, I would say, whether it's based on Tennis Industry Association sales reports or whatever, probably 16 gauge. It's that kind of in the middle of the road gauge. So let's say you have a player who is using a racket of the 16-gauge string and they're breaking a lot of string. Well, the first thing I might do is if that string is available in a heavier gauge, I might move them to the heavier gauge rather than moving them to a polyester. So that's kind of in a nutshell on strings. With rackets and weight, my general philosophy with weight in a racket is to refer a player to use the heaviest racket they can possibly handle and maneuver comfortably. Because in tennis, and in particular with tennis rackets, weight is your friend. Because that's kind of a basic physics thing. The more mass you have behind what you're swinging into an oncoming object, the easier it is for you to repel that object and send it back in the opposite direction, and the less shock that you're going to get, because the weight helps absorb that shock and decrease the impact and the vibration and kind of protect your arm. When you start adding weight or customizing your racket, now you're into a different realm, because now you're looking for specific things. You know, I can take and have many ladies who buy these big game improvement rackets that are very head light, and they spend $250 for it, and then in a year their game's improved, and all of a sudden that headlight racket doesn't work. But they don't necessarily have to go out and buy a new racket. I can put some lead tape in the head of that racket and redistribute the balance on their racket, and they're good to go for another couple of years probably. So with balancing and adding weight and changing the swing weight, that is always dependent on what you're trying to do with the racket for the player.
So it adds power to make the racket heavier. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
It adds power to the game. And, I mean, interestingly, or at least it was interesting to me when I was shopping for a new racket for myself, was, like you said, the heavier racket absorbs more of the vibration, which lessens your chances of developing tendonitis. And to me, in my non-physics mind, that didn't really make sense. Like, to me, a lighter racket should cause less harm to you, but in fact, the opposite is the case.
That's true. And that heavier racket also allows you not to have to swing so hard at the ball and to be able to get the same depth or even more depth when you're hitting the ball with the extra weight.
Interesting.
And then if you have a problem with the racket twisting in your hand, then now you might need to shore up the racket at, say, the 3 and 9 o'clock positions on the racket with a little lead tape. And that'll increase the torsional stability of the frame in those areas and keep the racket from, you know, vibrating and twisting so much in your hand when you don't hit it right in the center of the strings. But I know you always hit it in the center of the strings, don't you, Lisa?
Of course.
Yes, I know. So I won't ever have to customize a racket for you.
Listen, I had a coach tell me when I first got back to the game as an adult that I paid for that entire racket, and by God, I should be using the entire racket to hit the ball.
frame and everything. I know,
frame,
I've heard that
throw,
before.
You name it. okay, so we're down to our last couple minutes, and I want to just give you the opportunity to talk a little bit about your organization, your upcoming symposium, and how my listeners can reach you if they have questions.
Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate that. The name of the organization is the International Alliance of Racket Technicians, and for all of those listening, we do have a consumer. It's a pay subscription site for racket technicians from around the world, but you can join for free as a consumer and then have access to a couple of boards where you can ask some of our technicians questions. I do a training event once a year in Florida, as I mentioned earlier, at Saddlebrook. It's in the Tampa area, and that's basically for technicians to come and improve and gain more knowledge so they can be better in working with players like you, Lisa, and your listeners. And as far as, you know, what's coming up, that's always in September. And I'm also looking forward to working with you and your group, Lisa, because I think that the best way for us to prevent tennis injuries and help young players is to get them when they're young and work with the parents and the kids. So I'm hoping that we can have a nice collaboration and maybe make some inroads there with your group.
Well, me too. I think it would be fantastic. And to those of you listening, Tim and I have been talking already about maybe putting on some sort of workshop or even webinar so that his experts can talk to us as parents about the things that we need to be looking for in our children's equipment from the early stages of their development on through their collegiate play. And so if you're interested in that, I hope you'll drop me an email or tweet at me or Facebook me or reach out to me somehow and let me know that's something that would be of interest.
Lisa, let's give them the URL to my website, too, so if they want to go over there and join us. It's www.g, like in grand, GSS, like in Grand Slam Stringers. It's GSS.GSSAlliance.com.
And I'll have a link to that on our links page at Parenting Aces as well, so they can find you easily, Tim. I want to thank all of you for tuning in today, and the lady who called in with a question, I'm sorry I didn't get your name, but thanks for calling in. And for the rest of you, have a great week. I look forward to speaking with you again next week. Tim, thanks again for taking time out to be with us, and I look forward to working with you in the future.
Well, thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.